which made him think she was telling the truth. "Let's say I believe you," he said. "What did she want with you?" "Nothing in what I know about Lilith says she has particular interest in vampires."
"You know why the Clave was holding me," she said. "You would have heard."
"You killed 3 shadow hunters. Magnus said you claimed you were doing it because someone had ordered you to." He broke off. "Lilith?
If I tell you, will you help me?"
Camille's lower lip trembled. Her eyes were huge, green, pleading. She was very beautiful. Alec wondered if she had once looked at Magnus like this. It made him want to shake her. "I might," he said, astonished at the coldness in his own voice. "You don't have a lot of bargaining power here. I could go off and leave you for Lilith to have, and it wouldn't make much difference to me."
"Yes, it would," she said. Her voice was low. "Magnus loves you. He wouldn't love you if you were the sort of person who could abandon someone helpless."
"He loved you," Alec said. She gave a wistful smile.
"He appears to have learned better since then."
Alec rocked back on his heels slightly. "Look," he said, "tell me the truth. If you do, I'll cut you free and bring you to the Clave. They'll treat you better than Lilith would." She looked down at her wrists, chained to the pipe.
"The Clave chained me," she said. "Lilith chained me. I see little difference in my treatment between the two."
"I guess it's your choice, then. Trust me, or trust her," Alec said. It was a gamble, he knew. He waited for several tense moments before she said,
"Very well. If Magnus trusts you, I will trust you."
She raised her head, doing her best to look dignified despite torn clothing and bloody hair.
"Lilith came to me, not I to her. She had heard I was looking to recover my position as head of the Manhattan clan from Rafael Santiago. She said she would help me if I would help her."
"Help her by murdering shadow hunters?"
"She wanted their blood," said Camille. "It was for those babies. She was injecting shadow hunter blood and demon blood into the mothers, trying to replicate what Valentine did to his son. It didn't work, though. The babies became twisted things, and then they died."
Catching his revolted look, she said,
"I didn't know at first what she wanted the blood for. You may not think much of me, but I have no taste for murdering innocents."
"You didn't have to do it," said Alec, "just because she offered." Camille smiled tiredly.
"When you are as old as I am," she said, "it is because you have learned to play the game correctly, to make the right alliances at the right times, to ally yourself not just with the powerful, but with those who you believe will make you powerful. I know that if I did not agree to assist Lilith, she would kill me. Demons are not by nature trusting, and she would think I would go to the Clave with what I knew about her plans to kill shadow hunters, even if I promised her I would stay silent. I took a chance that Lilith was a greater danger to me than your kind were."
"And you didn't mind killing shadow hunters?"
"They were Circle members," said Camille. "They had killed my kind. And yours."
"And Simon Lewis? What was your interest in him?"
"Everyone wants the Daylighter on their side," Camille shrugged. "And I knew he had the Mark of Cain. One of Raphael's vampire underlings is still loyal to me. He passed on the information. Few other downworlders know of it. It makes him an incalculably valuable ally."
"Is that what Lilith wants with him?" Camille's eyes widened. Her skin was very pale, and beneath it, Alec could see that her veins had darkened, the pattern of them beginning to spread across the whiteness of her face like winding cracks in china. Eventually, starving vampires became savage, then lost consciousness once they had been without blood for too long. The older they were, the longer they could stave it off, but Alec couldn't help but wonder how long it had been since she had fed.
"What do you mean?"
"Apparently she summoned Simon to meet with her," said Alec. "They're somewhere in the building." Camille stared a moment longer, then laughed.
"A true irony," she said, She never mentioned him to me, and I never mentioned him to her. And yet both of us were pursuing him for our own ends. If she wants him, it's for his blood, she added. The ritual she's performing is most assuredly one of blood magic. His blood, mixed Downworlder and Shadowhunter blood, would be of great use to her. Alec felt a flicker of unease. But she can't hurt him, the Mark of Cain. She'll find a way around that, said Camille. She is Lilith, mother of warlocks. She's been alive a long time, Alexander. Alec got to his feet. Then I better find out what she's doing. Camille's chains rattled as she tried to rise to her knees.
Wait, but you said you would free me.
Alec turned and looked down at her. I didn't. I said I would let the Clave have you.
But if you leave me here, nothing prevents Lilith from finding me first.
She tossed her matted hair back. Lines of strain showed in her face.
Alexander, please, I beg you.
Whose will? Alec said. The words came out abruptly, unexpectedly, and much to his horror.
Will.
For a moment, her face was blank. Then it creased into a look of realization and near amusement.
You heard my conversation with Magnus.
Some of it? Alec exhaled carefully. Will is dead, isn't he? I mean, Magnus said it was a long time ago that he knew him.
I know what's bothering you, little Shadow Hunter.
Camille's voice had gone musical and soft. Behind her, through the windows, Alec could see the distant flickering lights of a plane as it flew over the city.
At first you were happy. You thought of the moment, not of the future. Now you have realized you will grow old and will someday die. And Magnus will not. He will continue. You will not grow old together. You will grow apart instead.
Alec thought of the people on the airplane, high up in the cold and icy air, looking down on the city like a field of glittering diamonds far below. Of course, he had never been in an airplane himself. He was only guessing at how it would feel. Lonely, distant, disconnected from the world. You can't know that, he said. That we'll grow apart. She smiled pityingly.
You're beautiful now, she said. But will you be in 20 years? In 40? 50? Will he love your blue eyes when they fade? Your soft skin when age cuts deep furrows in it? Your hands when they wrinkle and grow weak? Your hair when it grows white?
Shut up! Alec heard the crack in his own voice and was ashamed. Just shut up. I don't want to hear it.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Camille leaned toward him, her green eyes luminous.
What if I told you that you didn't have to grow old, didn't have to die?
Alec felt a wave of rage. I'm not interested in becoming a vampire. Don't even bother making the offer. Not if the only other alternative was death. For the briefest of moments, her face twisted. It was gone in a flash as her control reasserted itself. She smiled. A thin smile, and said,
"That wasn't my suggestion. What if I told you there was another way? Another way for the two of you to be together forever?"
Alec swallowed. His mouth was as dry as paper.
"Tell me," he said.
Camille raised her hands. Her chains rattled.
"Cut these free."
"No, tell me first." She shook her head.
"I won't do that."
Her expression was as hard as marble, as was her voice.
You said I had nothing to bargain with, but I do, and I will not give it away.
Alec hesitated. In his head he heard Magnus's soft voice. She is a master of implication and manipulation. She always has been.
But Magnus, he thought, you never told me, never warned me it would be like this. That I would wake up one day and realize that I was going somewhere you couldn't follow. That we are essentially not the same. There's no till death do us part for those who never die.
He took a step toward Camille, and then another. Raising his right arm, he brought the Seraph blade down as hard as he could. It sheared through the metal of her chains,
Her wrists sprang apart, still in their manacles, but free. She brought her hands up, her expression gloating, triumphant.
Alec?
Isabel spoke from the doorway. Alec turned and saw her standing there, her whip at her side. It was stained with blood, as were her hands and her silk dress.
What are you doing in here?
Nothing, I... Alec felt a wave of shame and horror. Almost without thinking, he moved a step in front of Camille, as if he could obscure her from his sister's view.
They're all dead. Isabel sounded grim. The cultists. We killed every one of them.
Now come on. We have to start looking for Simon. She squinted at Alec.
Are you okay? You look really pale.
I cut her free, Alec blurted. I shouldn't have. It's just...
Cut who free?
Isabel took a step into the room. The ambient city light sparked off her dress, making her shine like a ghost.
Alec, what are you blathering about?
Her expression was blank, confused. Alec turned, following her gaze, and saw...
Nothing.
The pipe was still there, a length of chain lying beside it. The dust on the floor only very slightly disturbed. But Camille was gone. Clary barely had time to put her arms up before the hellhound collided with her, a cannonball of muscle and bone and hot, stinking breath. Her feet went out from under her. She remembered Jace telling her the best way to fall, how to protect yourself. But the advice flew from her mind and she hit the ground with her elbows, agony shooting through her as the skin tore. A moment later, the hound was on top of her, its paws crushing her chest, its gnarled tail swishing from side to side in a grotesque imitation of a wag. The tip of its tail was spiked with nail-like protrusions like a medieval mace, and a thick growl came from its barrel-chested body, so loud and strong that she could feel her bones vibrate.
Hold her there! Tear her throat out if she tries to get away!
Lilith snapped instructions as the second hellhound sprang at Jace. He was struggling with it, rolling over and over, a whirlwind of teeth and arms and legs and the vicious whipping tail. Painfully, Clary turned her head to the other side and saw Lilith striding toward the glass coffin and Simon, still lying in a heap beside it. Inside the coffin, Sebastian floated, as motionless as a drowned body. The milky color of the water had turned dark, probably with his blood. The hound, pinning her to the ground, snarled close to her ear. The sound sent a jolt of fear through her, and along with the fear, anger. Anger at Lilith, and at herself. She was a shadow hunter. It was one thing to be taken down by a ravener demon when she never heard of the Nephilim. She had some training now. She ought to be able to do better. Anything can be a weapon. Jace had said that to her in the park. The weight of the hellhound was crushing. She made a gagging noise and reached for her throat, as if fighting for air. It barked and snarled, baring its teeth. Her fingers closed on the chain holding the Morgenstern ring around her neck. She yanked it, hard, and the chain snapped. She whipped it toward the dog's face, slashing the hound brutally across the eyes. The hound reared back, howling in pain, and Clary rolled to the side, scrambling to her knees. Bloody-eyed, the dog crouched, ready to spring. The necklace had fallen out of Clary's hand, the ring rolling away. She scrabbled for the chain as the dog leaped. A shining blade split the night, slashing down inches from Clary's face, severing the dog's head from its body. It gave a single howl and vanished, leaving behind a scorched black mark on the stone, and the stench of demon in the air. Hands came down, lifted Clary gently to her feet. It was Jace. He had shoved the burning seraph blade through his belt, and he held her by both hands, gazing at her with a peculiar look. She couldn't have described it, or even drawn it. Hope, shock, love, yearning, and anger all mixed together in his expression. His shirt was torn in several places, soaked with blood. His jacket was gone, his fair hair matted with sweat and blood. For a moment, they simply stared at each other, his grip on her hands painfully tight. Then they both spoke at once. Are you... she began.
Clary.
Still gripping her hands, he pushed her away from him, away from the circle, toward the walkway that led to the elevators. Go, he said raggedly. Get out of here, Clary.
Jace!
He took a shaking breath.
Please,
he said, and then he let her go, drawing the Seraph blade from his belt as he turned back toward the circle.
Get up, Lilith growled. Get up. A hand shook Simon's shoulder, sending a wave of agony through his head. He had been floating in darkness. He opened his eyes now and saw night sky, stars, and Lilith's white face looming over him. Her eyes were gone, replaced by slithering black snakes. The shock of the sight was enough to propel Simon to his feet. The moment he was upright, he retched and nearly fell to his knees again. Shutting his eyes against the nausea, he heard Lilith snarl his name, and then her hand was on his arm, guiding him forward. He let her do it. His mouth was full of the nauseating, bitter taste of Sebastian's blood. It was spreading through his veins, too, making him sick, weak, and shivery down to his bones. His head felt like it weighed 1,000 pounds, and dizziness was advancing and receding in waves. Abruptly, Lilith's cold grip on his arm was gone. Simon opened his eyes and found that he was standing over the glass coffin, just as he had been before. Sebastian floated in the dark, milky liquid, his face smooth, no pulse in his neck. Two dark holes were visible at the side of his throat where Simon had bitten him. Give him your blood. Lilith's voice echoed, not aloud but inside his head. Do it now. Simon looked up dizzily. His vision was fogging. He strained to see Clary and Jace through the encroaching darkness. Use your fangs, said Lilith. Tear your wrist open. Give Jonathan your blood. Heal him. Simon raised his wrist to his mouth. Heal him. Raising someone from the dead was a lot more than healing them, he thought. Maybe Sebastian's hand would grow back. Maybe that's what she meant. He waited for his fangs to come, but they didn't. He was too sick to be hungry, he thought, and fought back the insane urge to laugh. I can't, he said, half gasping. I can't. Lilith. Jace's voice cut through the night. Lilith turned with an incredulous hiss. Simon lowered his wrist slowly, struggling to focus his eyes. He focused on the brightness in front of him, and it became the leaping flame of a Seraph blade, held in Jace's left hand. Simon could see him clearly now, a distinct image painted onto the darkness. His jacket was gone. He was filthy, his shirt torn and black with blood, but his eyes were clear and steady and focused. He no longer looked like a zombie or someone caught sleepwalking in a terrible dream. Where is she? Lilith said, her snake eyes slithering forward on their stalks. Where is the girl? Clary. Simon's fogged gaze scanned the darkness around Jace, but she was nowhere to be seen. His vision was beginning to clear. He could see blood smearing the tiled ground, and bits of shredded torn satin caught on sharp branches of a hedge. What looked like paw prints smeared the blood. Simon felt his chest tighten. He looked quickly back at Jace. Jace looked angry, very angry indeed, but not shattered the way Simon would have expected him to look if something had happened to Clary. So where was she? She has nothing to do with this, Jace said. You say I can't kill you, demoness. I say I can. Let's see which of us is right. Lilith moved so fast she was a blur. One moment she was beside Simon, the next she was on the step above Jace. She slashed out at him with her hand. He ducked, spinning behind her, whipping the Seraph blade across her shoulder. She screamed, whirling on him, blood arcing from her wound. It was a shimmering black color, like onyx. She brought her hands together as if she meant to smash the blade between them. They struck each other with a sound like a thunderclap, but Jace was already gone, several feet away, the light of the Seraph blade dancing in the air before him like the wink of a mocking eye. If it had been any other shadow hunter but Jace, Simon thought, he would have been dead already. He thought of Camille saying, "Men cannot contend with the divine." Shadow hunters were human, despite their angel blood, and Lilith was more than a demon. Pain shot through Simon. With surprise, he realized his fangs had finally come out and were cutting into his lower lip. The pain and the taste of the blood roused him further. He began to rise to his feet, slowly, his eyes on Lilith. She certainly didn't appear to notice him or what he was doing. Her eyes were fixed on Jace. With another sudden snarl, she leaped for him. It was like watching moths flashing to and fro, watching the two of them as they battled back and forth across the rooftop. Even Simon's vampire vision had trouble keeping up as they moved, leaping over hedges, darting among the walkways. Lilith backed Jace up against the low wall that surrounded a sundial, the numbers on its face picked out in shining gold. Jace was moving so fast he was nearly a blur, the light of Michael whipping around Lilith as if she were being wrapped in a net of shining filaments. Anyone else would have been cut to ribbons in seconds, but Lilith moved like dark water, like smoke. She seemed to vanish and reappear at will, and though Jace was clearly not tiring, Simon could sense his frustration. Finally it happened. Jace swung the Seraph Blade violently toward Lilith, and she caught it out of the air, her hand wrapping around the blade. Her hand was dripping black blood as she yanked the blade toward her. The drops, as they struck the ground, became tiny obsidian snakes that wiggled away into the underbrush. Taking the blade in both hands, she raised it. Blood was running down her pale wrists and forearms like streaks of tar. With a snarling grin, she snapped the blade in half. One half crumbled to a shining powder in her hands, while the other, the hilt and a jagged shard of blade, sputtered darkly, a flame half smothered by ash. Lilith smiled. "Poor little Michael," she said. "He was always weak." Jace was panting, his hands clenched at his sides, his hair pasted to his forehead with sweat. "You and your name dropping," he said. "I knew Michael. I knew Samael. The angel Gabriel did my hair. It's like I'm with the band with biblical figures." This was Jace being brave, Simon thought. Brave and snarky because he thought Lilith was going to kill him, and that was the way he wanted to go. Unafraid and on his feet. Like a warrior. The way shadow hunters did. His death song would always be this. Jokes and snideness and pretend arrogance. And that look in his eyes that said, "I'm better than you." Simon just hadn't realized it before. "Lilith," Jace went on, managing to make the word sound like a curse. "I studied you. In school. They've cursed you with barrenness. 1,000 babies and they all died. Isn't that the case?" Lilith held her darkly glowing blade, her face impassive. "Be careful, little shadow hunter. Or what? Or you'll kill me?" Blood was dripping down Jace's face from the cut on his cheek. He made no move to wipe it away. "Go ahead." "No!" Simon tried to take a step. His knees buckled and he fell, slamming his hands into the ground. He took a deep breath. He didn't need the oxygen, but it helped somehow, steadying him. He reached up and grabbed the edge of the stone pedestal, using it to pull himself upright. The back of his head was pounding. There was no way there would be enough time. All Lilith had to do was drive forward the jagged blade she held, but she didn't. Looking at Jace, she didn't move, and suddenly his eyes flashed, his mouth relaxing. "You can't kill me," he said, his voice rising. "What you said before, I'm the counterweight. I'm the only thing tethering him." He thrust out an arm, indicating Sebastian's glass coffin. "To this world, if I die, he dies. Isn't that true?" He took a step back. "I could jump off this roof right now," he said. "Kill myself. End this." For the first time, Lilith appeared truly agitated. Her head whipped from side to side, her serpent eyes quivering as if they were searching the wind. "Where is she? Where is the girl?" Jace wiped blood and sweat from his face and grinned at her. His lip was already split, and blood ran down his chin. "Forget it. I sent her back downstairs while you weren't paying attention. She's gone. Safe from you." Lilith snarled. "You lie." Jace took another step back. A few more steps would bring him to the low wall, the edge of the building. Jace could survive a lot, Simon knew. But a fall from a 40-story building might be too much even for him. "You forget," said Lilith. "I was there, Shadow Hunter. I watched you fall and die. I watched Valentine weep over your body. And then I watched as the angel asked Clarissa what she desired of him, what she wanted in the world more than she wanted anything else. And she said you, thinking you could be the only people in the world who could have their dead loved one back, and that there would be no consequences. That is what you thought, isn't it? Both of you. Fools." Lilith spat. You love each other. Anyone can see that looking at you. The kind of love that can burn down the world or raise it up in glory. No, she would never leave your side. Not while she thought you were in danger. Her head jerked back, her hands shooting out, fingers curved into claws. There. There was a scream, and one of the hedges seemed to tear apart, revealing Clary, who had been crouched, hiding in the middle of it. Kicking and clawing, she was dragged forward, her fingernails scraping the ground, seizing in vain for a purchase on something that she could grip. Her hands left bloody trails on the tiles. No! Jace started forward, then froze as Clary was whipped up into the air, where she hovered dangling in front of Lilith. She was barefoot, her satin dress now so torn and filthy it looked like red and black rather than gold, swirling around her, one of her shoulder straps torn and dangling. Her hair had come completely out of its sparkling combs and spilled down over her shoulders, her green eyes fixed on Lilith with hatred. You bitch, she said. Jace's face was a mask of horror. He really had believed it when he said Clary had gone, Simon realized. He thought she was safe, but Lilith had been right, and she was gloating now, her snake eyes dancing as she moved her hands like a puppeteer, and Clary spun and gasped in the air. Lilith flicked her fingers, and what looked like the lash of a silver whip came down across Clary's body, slicing her dress open, and the skin under it. She screamed and clutched at the wound, and her blood pattered down on the tiles like scarlet rain. Clary! Jace whirled on Lilith. All right, he said. He was pale now, his bravado gone, his hands clenched into fists, were white at the knuckles. All right, let her go, and I'll do what you want. So will Simon. We'll let you... let me. Somehow, the features of Lilith's face had rearranged themselves. Snakes wriggled in the sockets of her eyes. Her white skin was too stretched and shining, her mouth too wide. Her nose had nearly vanished. You have no choice. And more to the point, you have annoyed me. All of you. Perhaps if you had simply done as I ordered, I would have let you go. You will never know now, will you? Simon let go of the stone pedestal, swayed and steadied himself. Then he began to walk. Putting his feet down, one after the other, felt like heaving enormous bags of packed wet sand down the side of a cliff. Each time his foot hit the ground, it sent a stab of pain through his body. He concentrated on moving forward, one step at a time. Maybe I can't kill you, Lilith said to Jace. But I can torture her, past the point of endurance. Torture her to madness and make you watch. There are worse things than death, Shadowhunter. She flicked her fingers again, and the silver whip came down, slashing across Clary's shoulder this time, opening up a wide gash. Clary buckled but didn't scream, jamming her hands into her mouth, curling in on herself as if she could protect herself from Lilith. Jace started forward to throw himself at Lilith and saw Simon. Their gazes met. For a moment the world seemed to hang in suspension, all of it, not just Clary. Simon saw Lilith, all her attention focused on Clary, her hand drawn back, ready to deliver an even more vicious blow. Jace's face was white with anguish, his eyes darkening as they met Simon's, and he realized and understood. Jace stepped back. The world blurred around Simon. As he leaped forward, he realized two things. One, that it was impossible. He would never reach Lilith in time. Her hand was already whipping forward. The air in front of her was alive with whirling silver. And two, that he had never understood before quite how fast the vampire could move. He felt the muscles in his legs, his back tear, the bones in his feet and ankles crack. And he was there. Sliding between Lilith and Clary as the demoness's hand came down. The long, razored silver wire struck him across the face and chest. There was a moment of shocking pain, and then the air seemed to burst apart around him like glittering confetti. And Simon heard Clary scream, a clear sound of shock and amazement that cut through the darkness.
Simon!
Lilith froze. She stared from Simon to Clary, still hanging in the air, and then down at her own hand, now empty. She drew in a long, ragged breath.
Sevenfold,
she whispered, and was abruptly cut off as a blinding incandescence lit up the night. Dazed, all Simon could think of was ants burning under the concentrated beam of a magnifying glass as a great ray of fire plunged down from the sky, spearing through Lilith. For a long moment she burned white against the darkness, trapped within the blinding flame. Her mouth opened like a tunnel in a silent scream. Her hair lifted, a mass of burning filaments against the darkness, and then she was white gold, beaten thin against the air, and then she was salt. 1,000 crystalline granules of salt that rained down at Simon's feet with a dreadful sort of beauty. And then she was gone.
Chapter 19. Hell is Satisfied. The unimaginable brilliance printed on the back of Clary's eyelids faded into darkness. A surprisingly long darkness that gave way slowly to an intermittent grayish light, blotched with shadows. There was something hard and cold pressing into her back, and her whole body hurt. She heard murmured voices above her, which sent a stab of pain through her head. Someone touched her gently on the throat, and the hand was withdrawn. She took a deep breath. Her whole body was throbbing. She opened her eyes to slits and looked around her, trying not to move very much. She was lying on the hard tiles of the rooftop garden, one of the paving stones digging into her back. She had fallen to the ground when Lilith vanished and was covered in cuts and bruises. Her shoes were gone, her knees were bleeding, and her dress was slashed where Lilith had cut her with a magical whip, blood welling through the rents in her silk dress. Simon was kneeling over her, his face anxious. The mark of Cain still gleamed whitely on his forehead. "Her pulse is steady," he was saying. "But come on. You're supposed to have all those healing runes. There must be something you can do for her." "Not without a steely. Lilith made me throw Clary's away so she couldn't grab it from me when she woke up." The voice was Jace's, low and tense with suppressed anguish. He knelt across from Simon, on her other side, his face in shadow. "Can you carry her downstairs? If we can get her to the Institute." "You want me to carry her?" Simon sounded surprised. Clary didn't blame him. "I doubt she'd want me touching her." Jace stood up, as if he couldn't bear to remain in one place. "If you could." His voice cracked, and he turned away, staring at the place where Lilith had stood until a moment ago, a bare patch of stone now silvered with scattered molecules of salt. Clary heard Simon sigh, a deliberate sound, and he bent over her, his hands on her arms. She opened her eyes the rest of the way, and their gazes met. Though she knew he realized she was conscious, neither of them said anything. It was hard for her to look at him, at that familiar face with the mark she had given him blazing like a white star above his eyes. She had known, giving him the mark of Cain, that she was doing something enormous, something terrifying and colossal whose outcome was almost totally unpredictable. She would have done it again, to save his life. But still, while he'd been standing there, the mark burning like white lightning as Lilith, a greater demon as old as mankind itself, charred away to salt, she had thought, "What have I done?" "I'm all right," she said. She lifted herself up onto her elbows. They hurt horribly. At some point, she'd landed on them and scraped off all the skin. "I can walk just fine." At the sound of her voice, Jace turned. The sight of him tore at her. He was shockingly bruised and bloody, a long scratch running the length of his cheek, his lower lip swollen, and a dozen bleeding rents in his clothes. She wasn't used to seeing him so damaged. But of course, if he didn't have a steely to heal her, he didn't have one to heal himself either. His expression was absolutely blank. Even Clary, used to reading his face as if she were reading the pages of a book, could read nothing in it. His gaze dropped to her throat, where she could still feel the stinging pain, the blood cresting there where his knife had cut her. The nothingness of his expression cracked, and he looked away before she could see his face change. Waving away Simon's offer of a helping hand, she tried to rise to her feet. A searing pain shot through her ankle, and she cried out, then bit her lip. Shadowhunters didn't scream in pain. They bore it stoically, she reminded herself. No whimpering. "It's my ankle," she said. "I think it might be sprained or broken." Jace looked at Simon. Carry her, he said, like I told you. This time, Simon didn't wait for Clary's response. He slid one arm under her knees and the other under her shoulders and lifted her. She looped her arms around his neck and held on tight. Clary had almost forgotten how strong he was, now that he was a vampire. He no longer smelled like himself, she thought, a little wistfully. That Simon smell of soap and cheap aftershave that he really didn't need, and his favorite cinnamon gum. His hair still smelled like his shampoo, but otherwise he seemed to have no smell at all, and his skin where she touched it was cold. She tightened her arms around his neck, wishing he had some body heat. The tips of her fingers looked bluish, and her body felt numb. Jace, ahead of them, shouldered the glass double doors open. Then they were inside, where it was mercifully slightly warmer. It was strange, Clary thought, being held by someone whose chest didn't rise and fall as they breathed. A strange electricity still seemed to cling to Simon, a remnant of the brutally shining light that had enveloped the roof when Lilith was destroyed. She wanted to ask him how he was feeling, but Jace's silence was so devastatingly total that she felt afraid to break it. He reached for the elevator call button, but before his finger touched it, the doors slid open of their own accord, and Isabel seemed to almost explode through them, her silvery gold whip trailing behind her like the tail of a comet. Alec followed, hard on her heels. Seeing Jace, Clary, and Simon there, Isabel skidded to a stop, Alec nearly crashing into her from behind. Under other circumstances, it would almost have been funny. But, Isabel gasped. She was cut and bloodied, her beautiful red dress torn raggedly around the knees, her black hair having come down out of its updo, strands of it matted with blood. Alec looked as if he had fared only a little better. One sleeve of his jacket was sliced open down the side, though it didn't look as if the skin beneath had been injured. "What are you doing here?" Jace, Clary, and Simon all stared at her blankly, too shell-shocked to respond. Finally, Jace said dryly, "We could ask you the same question."
"I didn't... We thought you and Clary were at the party," Isabel said.
Clary had rarely seen Isabel so not self-possessed. "We were looking for Simon." Clary felt Simon's chest lift, a sort of reflexive human gasp of surprise.
"You were?"
Isabel flushed.
"I... Jace?"
It was Alec, his tone commanding. He had given Clary and Simon an astonished look, but then his attention went, as it always did, to Jace. He might not be in love with Jace anymore, if he ever really had been, but Jace was always first on his mind in any battle.
"What are you doing here? And for the angel's sake, what happened to you?"
Jace stared at Alec, almost as if he didn't know him. He looked like someone in a nightmare, examining a new landscape, not because it was surprising or dramatic, but to prepare himself for whatever horrors it might reveal. "Steely," he said finally, in a cracking voice, "do you have your Steely?" Alec reached for his belt, looking baffled.
"Of course." He held the Steely out to Jace. "If you need Narazzi."
"Not for me," Jace said, still in the same odd, cracked voice. "Her." He pointed at Clary. "She needs it more than I do." His eyes met Alec's, gold and blue. "Please, Alec," he said, the harshness gone from his voice as suddenly as it had come. "Help her for me." He turned and walked away, toward the far side of the room where the glass doors were. He stood staring through them at the garden outside, or his own reflection. Clary couldn't tell. Alec looked after Jace for a moment, then came toward Clary and Simon, Steely in hand. He indicated that Simon should lower Clary to the floor, which he did gently, letting her brace her back against the wall. He stepped back as Alec knelt down over her. She could see the confusion in Alec's face, and his look of surprise as he saw how bad the cuts across her arm and abdomen were. "Who did this to you?"
"I..."
Clary looked helplessly toward Jace, who still had his back to them.
She could see his reflection in the glass doors, his face a white smudge, darkened here and there with bruises. The front of his shirt was dark with blood. It's hard to explain.
Why didn't you summon us? Isabel demanded, her voice thin with betrayal. Why didn't you tell us you were coming here? Why didn't you send a fire message or anything? You know we would have come if you needed us.
There wasn't time, Simon said, and I didn't know Clary and Jace were going to be here. I thought I was the only one. It didn't seem right to drag you into my problems.
Drag me into your problems? Isabel sputtered.
You, she began, and then to everyone's surprise, clearly including her own, she flung herself at Simon, wrapping her arms around his neck. He staggered backward, unprepared for the assault, but he recovered quickly enough. His arms went around her, nearly snagging on the dangling whip, and he held her tightly, her dark head just under his chin. Clary couldn't quite tell. Isabel was speaking too softly, but it sounded like she was swearing at Simon under her breath. Alec's eyebrows went up, but he made no comment as he bent over Clary, blocking her view of Isabel and Simon. He touched the steely to her skin, and she jumped at the stinging pain.
I know it hurts, he said in a low voice. I think you hit your head.
Magnus ought to look at you.
What about Jace? How badly is he hurt?
I don't know. Clary shook her head. He won't let me near him. Alec put his hand under her chin, turning her face from side to side, and sketched a second light irazzi on the side of her throat, just under her jawline. What did he do that he thinks was so terrible?
She flicked her eyes up toward him.
What makes you think he did anything?
Alec let go of her chin.
Because I know him. And the way he punishes himself, not letting you near him, is punishing himself. Not punishing you.
He doesn't want me near him, Clary said, hearing the rebelliousness in her own voice and hating herself for being petty.
You're all he ever wants, said Alec in a surprisingly gentle tone, and he sat back on his heels, pushing his long dark hair out of his eyes.
There was something different about him these days, Clary thought, a surety about himself he hadn't had when she had first met him. Something that allowed him to be generous with others as he had never been generous with himself before.
How did you two wind up here anyway? We didn't even notice you leave the party with Simon.
They didn't, said Simon.
He and Isabel had detached themselves, but still stood close to each other, side by side.
I came here alone.
Well, not exactly alone. I was summoned.
Clary nodded.
It's true. We didn't leave the party with him. When Jace brought me here, I had no idea Simon was going to be here, too.
Jace brought you here?
Isabel said, amazed.
Jace, if you knew about Lilith and the Church of Talto, you should have said something.
Jace was still staring through the doors. I guess it slipped my mind, he said tonelessly.
Clary shook her head as Alec and Isabel looked from their adoptive brother to her, as if for an explanation of his behavior.
It wasn't really Jace, she said finally. He was being controlled by Lilith.
Possession?
Isabel's eyes rounded into surprised O's. Her hand tightened on her whip handle reflexively.
Jace turned away from the doors. Slowly he reached up and drew open his mangled shirt so that they could see the ugly possession rune and the bloody slash that ran through it.
That, he said, still in the same toneless voice, is Lilith's mark. It's how she controlled me.
Alec shook his head. He looked deeply disturbed.
Jace, usually the only way to sever a demonic connection like that is to kill the demon who's doing the controlling.
Lilith is one of the most powerful demons who ever—
She's dead, said Clary abruptly. Simon killed her. Or I guess you could say the Mark of Cain killed her.
They all stared at Simon.
And what about you two? How did you end up here? He asked, his tone defensive.
Looking for you, Isabel said.
We found that card Lilith must have given you, in your apartment. Jordan let us in. He's with Maya downstairs. She shuddered. The things Lilith's been doing. You wouldn't believe. So horrible. Alec held his hands up. Slow down, everyone. We'll explain what happened with us, and then Simon, Clary, you explain what happened on your end. The explanation took less time than Clary thought it would, with Isabel doing much of the talking with wide, sweeping hand gestures that threatened, on occasion, to sever one of her friend's unprotected limbs with her whip. Alec took the opportunity to go out onto the roof deck to send a fire message to the Clave, telling them where they were and asking for backup. Jace stepped aside wordlessly to let him by as he left, and again when he came back in. He didn't speak during Simon and Clary's explanation of what had happened on the rooftop either, even when they got to the part about Raziel having raised Jace from the dead back in Idris. It was Izzy who finally interrupted, when Clary began to explain about Lilith being Sebastian's mother and keeping his body encased in glass. Sebastian? Isabel slammed her whip against the ground with enough force to open up a crack in the marble. Sebastian is out there, and he's not dead? She turned to look at Jace, who was leaning against the glass doors, arms crossed, expressionless. I saw him die. I saw Jace cut his spine in half, and I saw him fall into the river. And now you're telling me he's alive out there? No, Simon hastened to reassure her. His body's there, but he's not alive. Lilith didn't get to complete the ceremony. Simon put a hand on her shoulder, but she shook it off. She had gone a deadly white color. Not really alive isn't dead enough for me, she said. I'm going out there and I'm going to cut him into 1,000 pieces. She turned toward the doors. Iz! Simon put his hand on her shoulder. Izzy, no. No? She looked at him incredulously. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't chop him into worthless bastard-themed confetti. Simon's eyes darted around the room, resting for a moment on Jace, as if he expected him to chime in or add a comment. He didn't. He didn't even move. Finally, Simon said, Look, you understand about the ritual, right? Because Jace was brought back from the dead, that gave Lilith the power to raise Sebastian. And to do that, she needed Jace there and alive. As, what did she call it? A counterweight, put in Clary. That mark that Jace has on his chest. Lilith's mark. In a seemingly unconscious gesture, Simon touched his own chest, just over the heart. Sebastian has it too. I saw them both flash at the same time when Jace stepped into the circle. Isabel, her whip twitching at her side, her teeth biting into her red bottom lip, said impatiently. And? I think she was making a tie between them, said Simon. If Jace died, Sebastian couldn't live. So if you cut Sebastian into pieces, it could hurt Jace, Clary said. The words spilling out of her as she realized. Oh, my God. Oh, Izzy, you can't. So we're just going to let him live? Isabel sounded incredulous. Cut him to pieces if you like, Jay said. You have my permission. Shut up, said Alec. Stop acting like your life doesn't matter. Iz, weren't you listening? Sebastian's not alive. He's not dead either. Not dead enough. We need the Clave, said Alec. We need to give him over to the Silent Brothers. They can sever his connection to Jace, and then you'll get all the blood you want, Iz. He's Valentine's son, and he's a murderer. Everyone lost someone in the battle in Alicante, or knows someone who did. You think they'll be kind to him? They'll take him apart slowly while he's still living. Isabel stared up at her brother. Very slowly, tears welled in her eyes, spilling down her cheeks, streaking the dirt and blood on her skin. I hate it, she said. I hate it when you're right. Alec pulled his sister closer and kissed the top of her head. I know you do. She squeezed her brother's hand briefly, then drew back. Fine, she said. I won't touch Sebastian, but I can't stand to be this close to him. She glanced toward the glass doors where Jay still stood. Let's go downstairs. We can wait for the Clave in the lobby. and we need to get Maya and Jordan. They're probably wondering where we went. Simon cleared his throat. Someone should stay up here just to keep an eye on things. I'll do it. No, it was Jace. You go downstairs. I'll stay. All of this is my fault. I should have made sure Sebastian was dead when I had the chance, and as for the rest of it... His voice trailed off, but Clary remembered him touching her face in a dark hallway in the Institute, remembered him whispering, Mea culpa. Mea maxima culpa. My fault, my fault. My own most grievous fault. She turned to look at the others. Isabel had pushed the call button, which was lit. Clary could hear the distant hum of the rising elevator. Isabel's brow creased. Alec, maybe you should stay up here with Jace. I don't need help, Jace said. There's nothing to handle. I'll be fine. Isabel threw her hands up as the elevator arrived with a ping. Fine, you win. Sulk up here alone if you want. She stalked into the elevator, Simon and Alec crowding in after her. Clary was the last to follow, turning back to look at Jace as she went. He had gone back to staring at the doors, but she could see his reflection in them. His mouth was compressed into a bloodless line, his eyes dark. Jace, she thought as the elevator doors began to close. She willed him to turn, to look at her. He didn't. But she felt strong hands suddenly on her shoulders, shoving her forward. She heard Isabel say, Alec, what on earth are you— As she stumbled through the elevator doors and righted herself, turning to stare. The doors were closing behind her, but through them she could see Alec. He gave her a rueful little half-smile and a shrug, as if to say, what else was I supposed to do? Clary stepped forward, but it was too late. The elevator doors had clanged shut. She was alone in the room with Jace. The room was littered with dead bodies, crumpled figures all in gray hooded tracksuits, flung or crumpled or slumped against the wall. Maya stood by the window, breathing hard, looking out across the scene in front of her with disbelief. She had taken part in the battle at Brosseland and Idris, and had thought that was the worst thing she would ever see. But somehow this was worse. The blood that ran from dead cult members wasn't demon ichor. It was human blood. And the babies, silent and dead in their cribs, their small taloned hands folded one over the other, like dolls. She looked down at her own hands. Her claws were still out, stained with blood from tip to root. She retracted them, and the blood ran down her palms, staining her wrists. Her feet were bare and blood-stained, and there was a long scratch along one bare shoulder still oozing red, though it had already begun to heal. Despite the swift healing lycanthropy provided, she knew she'd wake up tomorrow covered in bruises. When you were a werewolf, bruises rarely lasted more than a day. She remembered when she had been human, and her brother, Daniel, had made himself an expert in pinching her hard in places where the bruises wouldn't show. Maya? Jordan came in through one of the unfinished doors, ducking a bundle of dangling wires. He straightened up and moved toward her, picking his way among the bodies. Are you all right? The look of concern on his face knotted her stomach. Where are Isabel and Alec? He shook his head. He had sustained much less visible damage than she had. His thick leather jacket had protected him, as had his jeans and boots. There was a long scrape along his cheek, dried blood in his light brown hair and staining the blade of the knife he held. I've searched the whole floor. Haven't seen them. Couple more bodies in the other rooms. They might have... The night lit up like a serif blade. The windows went white, and bright light seared through the room. For a moment, Maya thought the world had caught on fire, and Jordan, moving toward her through the light, seemed almost to disappear, white on white, into a shimmering field of silver. She heard herself scream, and she moved blindly backward, banging her head on the plate glass window. She put her hands up to cover her eyes, and the light was gone. Maya lowered her hands, the world swinging around her. She reached out blindly, and Jordan was there. She put her arms around him, threw them around him, the way she used to when he came to pick her up from her house, and he would swing her into his arms, winding the curls of her hair through his fingers. He had been slighter then, narrow-shouldered. Now muscle corded his bones, and holding him was like holding on to something absolutely solid, a pillar of granite in the midst of a blowing desert sandstorm. She clung on to him, and heard the beat of his heart under her ear as his hands smoothed her hair, one rough, soothing stroke at a time, comforting and familiar. Maya, it's all right. She raised her head and pressed her mouth to his. He had changed in so many ways, but the feel of kissing him was the same, his mouth as soft as ever. He went rigid for a second with surprise, and then gathered her up against him, his hands stroking slow circles on her bare back. She remembered the first time they had ever kissed. She had handed him her earrings to put in the glove compartment of his car, and his hand had shaken so badly he dropped them and then apologized and apologized until she kissed him to shut him up. She thought he was the sweetest boy she'd ever known. And then he was bitten, and everything changed. She drew away, dizzy and breathing hard. He let her go instantly. He was staring at her, his mouth open, his eyes dazed. Behind him, through the window, she could see the city. She had half expected it to be flattened, a blasted white desert outside the window. But everything was exactly the same. Nothing had changed. Lights blinked on and off in the buildings across the street. She could hear the faint rush of traffic below. "We should go," she said. "We should look for the others." "Maya," he said, "why did you just kiss me?" "I don't know," she said. "Do you think we should try the elevators?" "Maya, I don't know, Jordan," she said. "I don't know why I kissed you, and I don't know if I'm going to do it again, but I do know I'm freaked out and worried about my friends, and I want to get out of here. Okay?" He nodded. He looked like there were a million things he wanted to say, but had determined not to say them, for which she was grateful. He ran a hand through his tousled hair, rimed white with plaster dust, and nodded. "Okay." Silence. Jace was still leaning against the door, only now he had his forehead pressed against it, his eyes closed. Clary wondered if he even knew she was in the room with him. She took a step forward, but before she could say anything, he pushed the doors open and walked back out into the garden. She stood still for a moment, staring after him. She could call for the elevator, of course, write it down, wait for the clave in the lobby with everyone else. If Jace didn't want to talk, he didn't want to talk. She couldn't force him to. If Alec was right, and he was punishing himself, she'd just have to wait until he got over it. She turned toward the elevator and stopped. A little flame of anger licked its way through her, making her eyes burn. No, she thought. She didn't have to let him behave like this. Maybe he could be this way to everyone else, but not to her. He owed her better than that. They owed each other better than that. She whirled and made her way to the doors. Her ankle still ached, but the erotzas Alec had put on her were working. Most of the pain in her body had subsided to a dull, throbbing ache. She reached the doors and pushed them open, stepping onto the roof terrace with a wince as her bare feet came into contact with the freezing tiles. She saw Jace immediately. He was kneeling near the steps, on tiles stained with blood and ichor and glittering with salt. He rose as she approached, and he turned, something shiny dangling from his hand. The Morgenstern ring on its chain. The wind had come up. It blew his dark gold hair across his face. He pushed it away impatiently and said, "I just remembered that we left this here." His voice sounded surprisingly normal. "Is that why you wanted to stay up here?" said Clary. "To get it back?" He turned his hand so the chain swung upward, his fingers closing over the ring. I'm attached to it. It's stupid, I know. You could have said, or Alec could have stayed.